This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The biggest threat such militia groups pose to the main unified government is the idea that a people can resist government. Once you plant that seed that we can rebel or fight government, you invite other regions in Ethiopia.
That was Dr. Edgar Gitua, international relations security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, on the confrontation of Fano's militia and Ethiopian government forces in the country's northern region. Details coming up. Also, the United Nations warns of grave abuses against civilians in Sudan, and more on how its economy affects Zimbabwe's coming elections. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The fighting in Ethiopia's Amhara region has now become the country's most serious security crisis since the two-year civil war in Tigray. Amhara is Ethiopia's second most populous region. Residents there accuse the federal government of trying to undermine their region. Dr. Edgar Gitua, an international relations security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, who's been closely monitoring the situation, talked to me about the two sides involved in the fighting and what's at stake for Ethiopia and for its Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed.
Ethiopia has traditionally a very complicated security architecture, where you find quite a number of regions have their own, let's call them militia, who defend those regions. And so in the Amhara region, it's just one of those militias, the Fano militia, who are now feeling they do not want to come under government control. Prime Minister Abiy has decided to bring all these militias under one unified command, but those regions do not want to cede that control. It's a complex problem, but it is almost like if we look at Sudan, the RSF, before they were the Janjaweed before. So they are a force among themselves. When you now want to bring them into the mainstream army to streamline them, it creates a problem. So that's what's happening in the Amhara region in Ethiopia.
It's so similar in other African countries as well, like you mentioned Sudan. But this Fano thing you just mentioned, it's an informal militia with no publicly known command structure. And, they're not nearly as well equipped or organized as the government. But could they be a serious threat to the government if its struggle gets widespread support?
Yeah, it's true. The biggest danger of such militia groups is not in their strength. It is not in their military might. It's not even in their command structure and their organization. The biggest threat such militia groups pose to the main unified government is the idea that a people can resist government. Once you plant that seed that we can rebel or fight government, you invite other regions in Ethiopia. The Tigrayans are going to rise up again. All other small regions within Ethiopia are going to rise up again. And collectively, they will create a problem that could disintegrate Ethiopia. So their strength right now, what Abiy is struggling and fighting against, is to show that his central government is in control. And it's very vital for him to win this fight. Because if he does not contain the Fano forces, he will invite aggression from many other quarters within the country. So it is very important for him to get them under control very quickly. Unfortunately, it's disintegrating. It's moving into, situation is going, it's becoming more dire and more complicated. But the faster and sooner he's able to bring them into control and up. And for me, if I was Abiy, just giving him advice, I would have allowed them to remain the way they are without interfering with them. Have an informal agreement with them, with their final forces, to tell them, whenever I need you, you can come to, we can work together. But he gives them that semi-autonomy. So long as he tells them, so long as you're not opposing the government, I will leave you alone. Now that he is disturbing them, he has to deal with them. If he cannot deal with them, his problem will be not only the Fano forces, the Tigrayans are also going to come up, other areas are going to start rebelling against him, and that could easily crash and bring down his government.
And lastly, Doctor, the new state of emergency in the Amhara region has now been approved by the parliament.
This move, don't you think, will exacerbate the situation instead of actually controlling it?
Of course, yes, I agree with you. It is going to make the situation worse, definitely, because you are now radicalizing the people, emboldening the people. It is easy for those people to be very vulnerable to propaganda from their own leaders, that you see the central government under Prime Minister Abiy doesn't love us or are not interested in us. Of course, governments are the biggest enemies. Governments are constituted as criminal enterprises. It is governments that break the laws. It's governments that make and break laws. So what Prime Minister Abiy is trying to do is, in trying to cut, reduce communication between people, instill a bit of fear in them. It's not the best of tactics, but that is what he probably feels he has to do at this point, because he needs to stop that flow of information, flow of propaganda. So he really wants to clamp hard on them, and he's hoping that his superior military might is going to outlast them. It's going to make the people tired until they give in. Unfortunately, for some of these cultures and societies, it is going to embolden them. It's going to radicalize them. It's going to make them become hardliners. Even the ones who are pro-government might easily begin to become vulnerable to propaganda that the government does not like us. The government wants to finish us. And so that for me, that was probably not the best of moves. But let's just hope that he's able to maneuver that quickly and come to a compromise with the leadership within Amhara so that they can resolve this as quickly as possible.
That was Dr. Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He spoke with me from Nairobi. United Nations agencies are urging an end to what they call a disastrous, senseless war in Sudan and for perpetrators of war crimes there to be held accountable. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
4 months into the war in Sudan, UN officials say the lives of millions of people have been destroyed and their basic human rights violated. The UN Human Rights Office on Tuesday said it has good reason to believe the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces have committed serious violations of international humanitarian and human rights law. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk blames the rival general's quest for power for the deaths of thousands of people and the destruction of homes, schools, hospitals, and other essential services. His spokesperson, Elizabeth Throssell, says the human rights chief thinks the huge number of people forcibly displaced by the conflict, as well as acts of sexual violence, may amount to war crimes.
Volker Turk expressed grave concerns that the chaotic situation, mired in impunity, is ripe for exploitation by other opportunistic armed actors and militia groups, and the violence may escalate further as a result. Now, while it's difficult to establish an exact number of casualties due to the intensity of the fighting, tentative figures indicate that more than 4,000 people have so far been killed, including hundreds of civilians.
Since fighting erupted April 15th, the UN Refugee Agency reports more than 4.3 million people have been displaced, more than 3.2 million inside Sudan, and over 900,000 as refugees and asylum seekers in neighboring countries. UNHCR spokesperson William Spindler says protection and health teams in Chad, Central African Republic, Egypt, and South Sudan have described horrific ordeals faced by women and girls in Sudan.
Shocking incidents of sexual violence, including rape, sexual assault, sexual exploitation, and physical violence, have been reported by women and girls who have fled the conflict. These incidents are reportedly perpetrated by fighters, criminals, and smugglers against civilians in Khartoum and other areas, as well as those on the move.
In addition to lasting physical, sexual, reproductive, and mental health consequences, the UNHCR reports some survivors have arrived in neighboring countries pregnant because of rape. The UN Human Rights Office reports it has received credible reports of 32 incidents of sexual violence, including at least 28 cases of rape. It says men in RSF uniforms were connected to at least 19 of these incidents as perpetrators. The agency adds the actual number of cases is likely to be much higher. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Music. The health of Zimbabwe's economy is at the center of the debate in the upcoming election coming up August 23rd. The economy has steadily weakened for several years. What are the contributing factors that exacerbated the economic woes and added to the ongoing inflation in Zimbabwe? In the second part of our discussion, business professor Elliot Masote at DeVry University in Ohio says he thinks the increasing supply of printed money in the circulation is one of the primary reasons.
2007, 2008 was pretty much rough for the Zimbabwean economy and the Zimbabwean currency itself, to the point where they decided in 2009 to allow the multi-currency and eliminate the Zimbabwean dollar at all, because one US dollar could fetch up to $1 trillion note, and that $1 trillion note could not buy anything. So for 10 years, from 2009 to 2019, the US dollar was the one that was mostly used in Zimbabwe. And then they introduced the Zimbabwean dollar in 2010 up to about 2019. They went back again to the US dollar, because the Zimbabwean dollar keeps on losing value. It's being used right now, but every week, if not every day, it keeps on losing value because somehow the government is introducing some measures that are not even taken seriously by consumers, because any economy in the world, whether African, European, or South American, it's driven by consumers. But the problem we are having in Zimbabwe is that when the government passes on measures that relate to the currency of the economy, they do not educate, a bigger base of consumers who drive. They just introduce those measures and nobody follows them. And then the Zimbabwean dollar will keep on losing value because nobody needs it in his or her pocket. Because you get it today, tomorrow it will be worth nothing. Currently, the pressure to get the United States dollar from the businesses and people, common people, consumers, is so much tight. And because of that, you need more Zimbabwe dollars to get US dollars. Therefore, the government will print more Zimbabwe dollars to buy the US dollar and thereby depreciating the Zimbabwe dollar.
Regarding the overprinting of the money, the government of Mugabe responded to the economic crisis, particularly by printing more money or banknotes. Now, Professor, you are there. You are in Harare. Are you observing anything different? Do you see some kind of economic pressure on people?
Oh, yeah, there's so much pressure. You go everywhere you can imagine in the capital city, Harare, and other cities. You find people selling everything, from sweets in the streets, vegetables, anything people can imagine they're selling, which means Zimbabwe, to a bigger extent, it's a supermarket wherever you can look it. So, that's where the economy is playing out, outside the banking system, outside the formal system, because when everybody sells anything to survive, how does the government control that, including selling the US dollar itself? So everybody is selling something at any time of the day or night. You walk in the streets of Harare and other cities, you find somebody sitting by the corner selling. That's a lot of pressure for people, and some graduates too. They are getting in the streets to sell vegetables, fruits, and anything they can sell. So there's so much stress, and drug use among the youth is really going up because of that desperation to make a living without the economy that can actually support them. People are trying to build their own economies, which is something I support, but then they don't have resources to do that.
That was Elliot Masote, professor of business at DeVry University in Ohio. He spoke to me from Harare. Be sure to check voaafrica.com for more on Zimbabwe's election. In Niger, the military junta that deposed President Mohamed Bazoum last month says it may charge him with treason, which carries the death penalty. This after regional bloc ECOWAS last week said it formed a standby force for military action in Niger if Bazoum was not reinstated, and on Monday was confounded at the possible charges. J. Peter Pham, a former U.S. Special Envoy for the Sahel and distinguished fellow at the Atlantic Council, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme via Skype that ECOWAS and Western donor countries, including the United States, which suspended aid programs to Niger, should focus on a realistic response, saying it has a lot to lose if it doesn't.
For the United States, the preservation of our two air bases at Arleet and at in Niamey, which are vital not only to supporting efforts to increase security in the Sahel, but for the larger region as a whole. They're very important bases. So preserving that. Keeping Wagner, which has not been a helpful presence where it's gone elsewhere in Africa, from entering. There's been rhetoric on that, but thus far, thankfully, we're not aware of any actual deployments, and let's keep it that way. And certainly we have to see President Bazoum and those unlawfully detained in Niger freed at, with their families and their safety assured, at the very least. So there's some room for maneuver, but one has to be do that in a climate where it's not escalating rhetoric driving up passions.
Aside from Wagner and making sure they don't enter into Niger, you've got Burkina Faso, Mali, where things like this have happened before, and they've already said they are in support of the military junta. So are you worried that they're going to play a part in this in the future?
Well, certainly the rhetoric is there, and that's where I say both sides need to de-escalate. The reality is Mali, as we've seen in recent days, unfortunately, peace accords that were signed years ago between the central government and some of the northern separatist groups has broken down. And there's in the last 24, 48 hours, considerable fighting in the north of Mali. So they've got troubles enough of their own. Burkina Faso, two-thirds of the country is now a no-go zone for its military who hunker down in the sea. So they've got, again, enough troubles of their own that realistically they're not going to be able to deploy in support of anyone else. So that's not realistic either.
You're saying these countries don't have the military to spare to help out.
They don't have the military to spare or even to get there. How are they, you know, how it's 500 kilometers from Ouagadougou to Niamey. It's open territory, most of it, which is not controlled by the government. The idea that the Burkina Bay military, which has enough trouble on its hands, is going to march 500 kilometers across open territory where two terrorist organizations are active and going to make it in any shape to help anyone is just risible.
So de-escalate, that's the key word. That's your operative word moving forward. Are you still hopeful that both sides, all sides, will de-escalate and that there can be a bloodless conclusion, whether or not Bazoum is ushered back into power?
I think there's a narrow window, and I hope everyone takes advantage of it. I think it was very interesting. Last week, acting U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Victoria Nuland visited Niamey on her way home from Saudi Arabia. And in her remarks, she mentioned that the United States had offered its good offices to engage here. She didn't say it had been taken up, but I would hope that, you know, more level-headed members of the junta take her up on that opening. I think it's a very positive sign that although there have been anti-French demonstrations, and in fact, the French embassy was attacked by a mob who burnt down its gate, there has been not been so much as a single picket outside the new U.S. embassy in Niamey. So perhaps there is some room for the U.S. to act positively. And I'm at least hopeful that rational minds on both sides will take advantage of that.
That was Ambassador J. Peter Pham, former U.S. Special Envoy for the Sahel and a distinguished fellow at the Atlantic Council. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Damme in Washington. ECOWAS's military chiefs will meet in Ghana on Thursday and Friday to discuss possible intervention in Niger. Bazoum's ousting unleashed a shockwave around West Africa, where Mali and Burkina Faso, also battered by Islamist insurgencies, have also suffered military takeovers. International concern is mounting for the health of Bazoum, his wife and son, who have been held at his official residence since the coup. Yesterday, the United States criticized the plan to put Bazoum on trial. You can find all the updates of the crisis in Niger on voaafrica.com. Libya's capital has been rocked by heavy fighting between the two main armed groups linked to the Tripoli-based government, forcing a halt to fights from the city's civilian airports. The French news agency AFP quotes an interior ministry official as saying the fighting between the 444 Brigade and the Al-Rada Force, or Special Deterrence Force, erupted in the eastern suburbs Monday night and carried over into today. There was no immediate reports of any casualties from the fighting. The official said tensions arose soon after the Al-Rada force arrested the head of the 444 Brigade without explaining why. Air traffic was stopped at Mitiga Airport and flights were diverted to Misrata, about 180 kilometers to the east. The 444 Brigade is affiliated with Libya's defense ministry and is reputed to be the country's most disciplined force. The Al-Rada force is a powerful, ultra-conservative militia that acts as Tripoli's police force. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Change, child marriage, girls' education, mental health are some of the issues that African filmmakers are pointing their cameras towards that most impact women on the continent. Next on Our Voices, we'll discuss how women filmmakers in Africa and throughout the diaspora are using this genre of film to shine a light on social, political, and human rights issues. Join the conversations Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, in Zimbabwe and Gabon, voters are preparing for next week's elections. In Zimbabwe, the youth want jobs and security amid economic chaos. In Gabon, President Ali Bongo says he is, quote, more ready than ever for a third term. Join me, Heidi Adams, as we discuss the elections in Zimbabwe and Gabon on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
Coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese signatories to the political framework agreement are meeting in Addis Ababa today, seeking unification of all political parties aimed at ending the conflict in the country. And more than 120 South Sudanese benefited from free eye surgeries in Bentiu. More on South Sudan in Focus.
Sporty greetings. This is VOA's Sunny Young. Brighten your day by tuning in the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and VOAAfrica.com. It's the sunny side of sports right here on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, inviting you to listen every week as a panel of VOA and Washington-based journalists discuss the top domestic and international news stories. With our correspondents and sources from the White House, Capitol Hill, and elsewhere, we will bring